Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. This is Joelle Anthony, the Great Woman. Right now we're waiting on the Hood Scholar, our guest for today, to call in. He should be calling in momentarily, and we'll get this interview started. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for calling in. I guess we'll just go ahead and jump right into it.
Can
you tell myself and the listeners a little bit about yourself, what it is that you do and where you're from?
From Richmond, Virginia. I am a math and physics teacher. Came from urban school system. Had a bit of a struggle graduating from urban school system. Pretty much went off and did a lot of self-teaching to bring myself up to a certain level where I could, perform higher level mathematics, things of that nature.
Okay.
So that's the basics.
Sorry.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was
there's
done.
In the system, like I'm hearing you and it sounds like there's a pause, but I'm sorry, I'll wait like 10 seconds.
Okay. Yes, I was done.
Oh, okay. So how did you become interested in mathematics and physics? And how did that transition into you becoming an educator?
Well, ever since I was younger, one of my favorite pastimes would be just kind of sitting back, just pondering random abstract things about the universe. My parents, bought me microscopes and things like that for Christmas. I would dismantle maybe radio-controlled cars, things of that nature. Just had a general interest in it. So when it came to time to go to school, of course, I dove into that arena, to try to gain some of the needed education to pursue that particular career. As far as the education piece, that was kind of something that I fell into. I started, doing some tutoring. I felt like I always had a knack for explaining things. So, I had a certain level of success regarding that. And then that kind of just built momentum where I started to get, several positions or other positions with education and people, my resume got built up and kind of made a little bit of a name for myself. And so here I am at this point, still doing the education thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what impact have mathematics and education had on your everyday life? Your understanding of the universe. Because I think you have such a unique way of explaining things. Like, I watch your videos, and I'm like, wow, this actually makes sense listening to you rap about it. But if I were to sit here with my book and try to do a math problem, I'm going to get bored. So
how
has your urban culture, in your opinion, affected the way that you're able to relay your information? And how do your understandings of mathematics and physics have an impact on your everyday life?
The way you are required to think in order to do the topic is a very structured and organized deductive reasoning process. And really it can be employed in anything that you do. I've actually employed, it's a dismantling of things that is like most fundamental level. It's just a strict requirement in order to do well at the topic. So I employ that. I've done, I had my hand in music and things of that nature, and I was able to pick up on it relatively fast just because of, the thought process that I applied to it. I tell students a lot of times that, they always ask. They always say, "Hey, when are we going to ever use this? We're never going to use this or see this ever again in life." And I always tell them, of course, it's hard to argue against that sometimes. But I tell them that one part of, its purpose is just in case you do have a career where you do use it. But if not, it's for developmental purposes, you know, just training the way that they think, expanding their mind to be able to take on things that involve multiple steps and deep thinking and connecting the dots, things of that nature. And as far as you asked how my urban upbringing factored into it, was that one of the part of the question?
How did that influence your delivery? Just the way that you're able to relay the information. You know, I know you use a lot of rap beats and lyrics and examples from the streets, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, you know, like I said, I grew up in Richmond, and it's you know, it definitely has this urban side to it. And being a, you know, you're going to whether no matter how focused you are on a particular topic, you know, you're going to be somewhat of a product of your environment. So, you know, I had that side to me. I had that math, science, kind of intellectual side to me, but I also had the, you know, hood side or whatever, aka, you know, i.e. hood scholar,
okay.
Where,
yeah.
You know, I was just in my environment. You know, it was just, you know, how I was brought up, pretty much, schools that I went to. So quite naturally, I got into, you know, things that people do as a pastime. You know, you stand around in the cypher and you know, everybody's spitting the freestyle and stuff like that. So, you know, we got into that and making beats and, you know, at the parties, on the microphone, you know, rapping and things of that nature. You know, just trying to, you know, everybody trying to be popular at that time. So you try to do your best at it. So, you know, within that, I kind of got good at it. And, you know, I say, well, you know, the whole point of the channel is to try to penetrate the hip-hop culture and get them more interested into, you know, math and science and things of that nature. And I said, what better way than to do it in a way that they can really relate to? You know, you say, hey, you know, he kind of looks like me, or, you know, he's doing some of the things that I like to do. You know, to really try to get it in there, because it's one of those topics that's really, really hard to get them interested in. And, you know, just while I'm on that topic, it's not really just for, you know, urban students. Actually, I would say a great percentage of the, you know, my subscribers are probably not urban students, you know, but so it's not just for that.
I noticed that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Your message is universal.
Right, exactly. I mean, because, you know, hip-hop itself has spread like wildfire. So, you know, anybody who has a liking for hip-hop or is entertained by it, you know, can find, you know, can latch on to the content of the channel. You know, it's just an entertaining way to do it, pretty much.
Okay. So you mentioned your students, and you also touched on hip-hop, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute, but... what age students do you teach?
I'm sorry, can you state that one more time?
I said, what age students do you teach?
Oh, 11th and 12th grade.
11th and 12th grade, or 11th and 12th, you know?
11th and 12th grade, 17, 18 years old.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
So just getting ready to decide what they want to do with life and the directions where you want to go and you start questioning things.
Exactly. Yeah,
now,
exactly.
In your classroom, I'm pretty sure that you notice that your students have a lot of misconceptions about mathematics. And me personally, I was a student that was intimidated by math because I felt like it was hard. Where do you believe the misconceptions about math and physics and anything that challenges us comes from?
You know, to be honest about it, well, first of all, it's like the misconception about math is that it makes no sense. You know, they look at it and say, hey, this makes no sense. When the truth of the matter is, it makes all the sense in the world. Now, I'm sure that any teacher teaching any subject would argue that their subject makes the most sense. But, of course, I'm going to say that math makes the most sense because there's no gray area. You know, something is either right or wrong, and the concepts in it, you know, they can be built without any sidestepping, you know, like an English paper, you know, is subject to interpretation. You know, what did the author mean here, or what did you get out of it, and things of that nature. With math, there isn't any of that. I tell the students all the time that you, a lot of times they try to memorize things. And, of course, you know, they always ask, well, how do you remember all of this? Well, I say it's not that I remember it, it's that I understand it. So with that understanding, I know exactly where I'm supposed to go with it. So all I need is a starting point. And then all I need is a starting point and a set of instructions, you know, and a sort of an ending point. And I know how to connect the dots in order to get to that ending point. So that's the misconception of it. I think they try to do a lot of memorizing, and, you know, sadly, some educators may use a lot of tricks and tools and, you know, creating songs and acronyms and things of that nature to, you know, to get students to pass tests, and that kind of, you know, that cripples them in the long run, because after that song drips out of their ear while they sleep and they no longer remember it, then they have a bigger bag to carry, you know, once they go to the next level. What was the second part of the question that you asked? Did that cover it? Was that another part?
That answered my question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It really did. Okay, now, as you know, this is a channel dedicated to having an open, honest discussion about death and life.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I think you have a very unique perspective from a mathematical standpoint. So I'm going to ask you, what are your views and beliefs on life and death, and what has imparted these opinions and beliefs upon you?
That's a difficult one to connect, because, you know, matters of life and death are, you know, heavily connected to spirituality. You know, math and science are like concrete experimentation types of things, and there's very little that we can really pin down and say this is the answer, you know, when it comes to life and death. Just in general, if I had to take a wild stab for a connection, let's see. It's really, to be honest with you, I consider the two topics heavily deviated.
Okay.
And only because, like I said, with math, you know, you have to be able to, you know, it's all about proofs and things of that nature. And life and death matters are very much, you know, to the individual and what their personal beliefs are. So as far as, you know, my personal beliefs on life and death itself, perfectly honest, it's all a question. I really can't say definitively, you know, as far as if you want to go to a religious side and say that, you know, when we pass away, that there's somewhere that we go and we are conscious of our passing and we continue to live on and be happy or unhappy, depending on which one you go to, right? I think if I had to pin the way that I think to it, logic, I would say we go back to exactly how we were before we were born, unconscious of it. Now, the first thought is definitely more comforting. I would love to think that way, and if it is that way, then that'll be absolutely wonderful. But at this particular point, you know, I can only say, just as when we're asleep, we're pretty much unconscious of it. You know, they call death an eternal sleep. So I would have to say just initially that, you know, that's the way that I believe things transpire or take place. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in many of your videos, you use the term thought experiments. Could you just define for our listeners what thought experiments are? And I'm going to ask you a few questions from some things that struck out as interesting to me from your videos. If you could just define what thought experiments are.
Okay. Thought experiments are just pretty much logic and deductive reasoning processes where you can't physically experiment on them. You know, you can use some things that are understood, especially as it relates to mathematics, you know, some things that have been accepted as mathematical laws or at least a strong theory And you pin it to that and your understanding of that, and you say, and you stand back and you think and you ponder and you say, okay, well, no, it does make sense. And from a logical deductive reasoning standpoint, you say, well, there isn't a whole lot refuting this. You know, you say, hey, you know, this is this these dots kind of connect. So it's just something that you think about and reach a conclusion on, in which there may be little contradiction, or at least makes some sense. You know, just similar to a theory versus a law.
Okay. Now, with that in mind, in your video, We Do Not Exist, you discuss relativity as it pertains to material objects in infinite space.
Right.
I guess you kind of touched on this before, and I want to be clear that I'm just interested in your perspective. I know that everything is subject to interpretation, but I'm just interested in your perspective on how do life and death relate to time and space, and how does this give significance to our existence? And upon death, does relativity still exist? And what can it be measured against?
To time and infinite space. Well, I guess I could say that, you know, the energy that drives life, we can consider the total energy in the universe to be, say, constant, or maybe even infinite. Like, you know, it never changes. You know how they say that energy can't be created or destroyed. So as far as living, you know, you're just kind of just borrowing from this energy pool. When you die, that energy goes back into the pool. So I guess that could be some sort of relation to space. As far as time is that is a heavily argued topic as far as exactly what time is. I mean, of course, our perception of time is just, you know, linked to us being born, growing up, and then dying. But as far as the actual link to more topics that are argued within, you know, various physics communities, once again, it's very hard to connect, to make a link between the two things.
Okay. Okay. To go back to what you mentioned about hip-hop, in many of the lyrics that we hear today, violence and death are spoken of casually. Personally, I feel as if they're spoken of with no regard for or respect for human life. In one of your videos, you actually broke down the mathematics of a drive-by. And that video blew my mind because you went into detail that I would have never thought about. Could you just give a synopsis of that video for our listeners? And kind of hit the high lights of that video for me.
Oh, well, you know, the video was, you know, done in a kind of comical way. It's basically just saying how to optimize your drive-by if you wanted to do one, making sure that you hit your targets. Or, you know, basically use calculus, you know, in calculus you got optimization problems where you define – you know, the shape of a function, and you find its derivative, you set the derivative equal to zero, and you find its minimum and maximum points or whatever. So in the video, it found the points that the minimum distance that you needed in order to shoot this gun, because this gun has a short range distance, a firing distance. So, you know, you want to be in as close as you can. But, you know, the guy standing on this median, and this is about as close as you can get, you know, so you got to figure out what point was the optimal time to shoot the gun so you don't hit innocent bystanders or whatever. You know, it was definitely meant to be comical, and at the end, I think I made, you know, some sort of joke that he took somebody's life for a shiny gold chain or something like that, just making sure that people knew that, you know, it was just a joke, just something to draw your attention in, not advocating it or anything of that nature.
Of course not.
Just something to catch. just an eye catcher, you know, just really trying to push the tone, not the tone, just, you know, the hood aspect of the channel, things of that nature. The comments, the responses to it, they were good, actually. You know, I think everyone knew, you know, the aim of it, because, you know, I was talking about calculus. I was doing all math in it, and, you know, people poke fun at a lot of things. You know, comedians poke fun at all kinds of topics and things of that nature. So I just pretty much decided to poke fun at that and relate it to math.
Yeah, you went into the blood pressure and, you know, the functions of different organs, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
If any of the listeners have a chance to, could you give them information about how to find you and learn more about you?
Oh, yeah. I have a YouTube channel. I wasn't able to change the URL to make it a nice, neat URL, because you had, like, one opportunity to do it, and then after you missed that opportunity, that's pretty much it. So, I mean, but it's still an easy search into the YouTube search bar. You just type Hood Scholars, that's HOOD, and I spell Scholars, SKALAS, and okay. It's pretty much the only thing spelled like that, so the search bar, the search will return the channel pretty much at the top of the list.
Okay. Now, my last question, and I do want you to answer this from a personal perspective. In your video, everything in one of your videos, I think it was There Is No Present, your statement was extremely powerful to me. It said, everything in our past is already there. Everything in our future is already here, and we are just playing it out. If this is the case, in your opinion, how do we maximize our potential in the present and get the most out of this experience called life?
That's interesting, because it was kind of suggesting that everything is already in the past, and, you know, everything in the future is already written. And mind you, you know, these things are really food for thought. You know, I'm not making any concrete assertions that, you know, this, I'm stomping my foot down and saying this is the way it is. But regarding that, if I were to assert that the past is already written, the future is already written, and that takes away any concept of free will. So that would take away any power of decision over the present. So that kind of peers into the world of things that have been suggested within quantum physics studies, is that there's a multiverse, like there are multiple outcomes that could take place. And that is where your decision making comes in. It's just like connecting the dots. Like if you're going across a pond and you're hopping across the pads on a pond or whatever, and there are multiple pads in the pond, and, you know, from one step to the next, you either two step left or right. But at the end of it, you end up on the left side of the pond, or the right side of the pond, or the middle, and it just comes down to what steps you decided to take at that particular point. So, you know, as it relates to quantum physics, they say at one particular point there are a multitude of outcomes that something can possibly have, and at that point it splits into multiple universes. So, you know, in a sense, it's kind of funny. It's almost like you're competing with yourself. You're competing with another you in another universe. And so, so you say, let's say that you make the wrong decision, where there's a you that made the right decision. And, you know, this is just, of course, I'm not saying that that's the way it is. It's just an interesting thought, you know, linked to theories being birthed within that study. There's a you that made the right decision. So, but at any given time, you can shift your path and get on the path of the you that made the right decision. So even though things may be, or if it was thought of that things are already written, and I guess people can watch the video to see exactly why I said that. That will bring a little more clarity to it. So even though things are already written, or that's what the video is saying, there are multiple paths. There are multiple that are already written. So multiple written paths. So choosing those paths is how you place a bearing on your present, your decision making.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, and I want to take this opportunity to invite you back again, and I'm pretty sure I will be bugging you with emails, asking more questions, just to play around with some thought experiments in my own life, and hopefully you'll be willing to participate again. So what I'm going to do right now is just open up the lines. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask, and we have about 4 minutes left, so I'm just going to open up the lines, and if we don't get any questions, I'll go ahead and end it after.
All right, absolutely.
We are now open for questions. Anybody have any questions? I guess not. Well, thank you so much. And again, I appreciate your time, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Okay, I appreciate it. Okay, bye.